While we go around the room, just give a quick introduction. There's a couple faces here that are fairly new. My name's Mark Collier, and I represent septic tank installers, designers, and maintenance operation maintenance specialists.
Paul Childers, and I represent the Red Sox of Southwest Washington.
Lydia Gurman, and administrative assistant for Clark County Public Health.
Kelly Espinoza, I represent Legacy Health.
Adrienne Fairbanks, I'm a veterinarian, and I represent the veterinary physician.
So I'm Gordy Euler, I'm the deputy director of community planning. Here to give a presentation. Our keynote speaker. We'll just say no speaker.
Alan Melnick, Public Health.
I'm Joan Cayley, I'm a nurse, but I'm on the council as the non-elected representative from the City of Vancouver.
My name is Stephanie Royce-Masha. I'm also a nurse, and I'm here representing a nurse practicing in Clark County, and I work at Peace Health.
My name is Greg Malk. I'm a physical therapist, and I'm a consumer of public health.
I'm Tracy Root. I'm a nurse, and I'm a consumer of public health as well.
I'm Amy Bishop-Smith, and I'm a youth representative.
Don Skirt, public health. John Roth, our public utilities, representing our public health providers.
Maybe we could take a minute and just review the minutes and see if there's any changes to be made or improve the minutes.
Do we need to approve the minutes from last month? Is that what?
No, it was the month before. We didn't do the minutes.
Yeah.
From the meeting because we had the board of county councilors, and you don't want to take time.
Right. Did we need to approve the minutes from the Board of Health?
I don't know if we had minutes.
No.
So this would be.
Yeah.
Do you have a second?
Second.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Minutes approved. The next item is, maybe just kind of a meeting update on the Board of Health and the PAC. Just if anybody had any comments on the meeting, kind of what I heard, the counselors were impressed with the group, that we got along so well.
Sorry.
I know the one question is what can we do to help them and everything, and kind of what I took away from the meeting was to keep bugging them on our issues that are important to us, such as ACEs. So I don't know if anybody else had any impressions, or maybe Alan had some feedback.
I thought it went really well, and I thought there was good understanding on both sides what the role of PAC is and how you interact with them. I don't know anybody from our staff. If you have anything else to say,
I've been to three of those. I believe where it was a joint PAC and BOH. I thought that one went as well as the other two easily. So excellent job.
I agree.
One of the things that Councillor Bolt said that I think that I think we need to do is I think he would like to see more of us supporting the work of the Board of Health attending the meetings. And then I think the other remark he made is, you know, years ago he talked about how John Wiesman and Mark and I did a presentation at Malvo. He made it sound like we went all over the country. I mean, we did go all over the country. He may have gone all across the country, but I didn't. And you know, we have something special to share here, and so I think he would really like us to continue to think about where can we share about how the structure here of our Public Health Advisory Council of Public Health work, because you know the interest that we had when we presented at NALBA was real high, and I think he liked getting, you know, again, we're a leader in Clark County, and I think that it's something that we could continue to think about how can we share. And I was just at the Commission on Aging meeting, and Mark Bolt was there giving some recognition to the current commission members. And again, if you think about where we are in Clark County and how we think about the health of this community, we're a leader in the country in addressing this boomer generation, you know, the Commission on Aging dealing with aging issues. And so, you know, it might be fun to think about how could we do something collaboratively with the Commission on Aging, Public Health, maybe even planning, you know, how do you build a healthy community, you know, from multiple perspectives? So, just
so for those of you who may not know, NALBO is a National Association of Local Boards of Health. So it's made up of boards of health from around the country. And Mark, I think when he was last on the board, he was involved in that. And he wants to get involved again, which I think would be a really good thing. And then there's also a state association of local boards of health that has been kind of, I don't think it's been real active, so he might generate that. But he's certainly interested in showcasing the relationship between FAC is one of the strong points of our community here in terms of a group that provides advice and support to the board of health.
Well, you know, I think it was kind of funny that Mark mentioned that about us all getting along together, because I think, John, you mentioned that when y'all went to the meetings that people questioned that, you know, they wanted to know how did we all get along together, you know? I mean, all so many different people from different areas. You know.
There's no chair throwing or anything. I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah.
I was wondering I don't know. It was interesting because that was something that I came across that we all get along well. And,
right.
And I think
it was a projection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the case. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I felt a little bit odd in one of the councilmen, I guess Mark said something alluding to it, is that there was the three of them were kind of preaching to the choir, and the three of them are very supportive of some of the work that we're doing here. But there were two, you know, members that were not present, and I guess my worry or my push would be to how do we get those two engaged in some of the work, because that's probably the hardest part of trying to get moving on some of the
after
things.
The election.
But they're, you know, it didn't sound like they all totally got along from what I understand.
No.
So maybe that was,
if you read the paper that same day, well, that it's kind of explains a lot of different
things. So if you want to see the Board of Health meetings or the board, and they're also the Board of County Councilors, you can go to clark.wa.gov, mm-hmm. and then click on where it's called Councilors Grid.
Uh-huh.
And you can see the videos of all their meetings.
Oh, the true video.
So you can see how they work together.
It's better. Yeah, it's better.
After we hear Gordy's presentation, you'll hear that there's an opportunity for you. There will be an opportunity for you folks to interact and give them advice directly. So we'll be talking about that more in a little while. But no, you're absolutely right. There are all five of them are the Board of Health, and we have to do the best we can to reach out to all five of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all part of the Board of Health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which we do, but if you watch the Board of Health meetings, not only the Board of County Councilors, the Board of Health meetings are also on video, so you can see us interacting with, and you're welcome to come to the Board of Health meetings.
My observation at the Board, you know, I watch the Board of Health meetings on the cable television, all five of them seem, at the Board of Health level, fairly active. They ask questions.
Yeah.
And they tend to get along better, a little bit better at the Board of Health meetings. Depends on what's on the agenda.
The Board of Health meets fourth Wednesday?
Yeah, but we're meeting generally the fourth Wednesday, but we're having a meeting tomorrow. I'll talk about that in a minute when I get to my little department update. We moved up the meeting this month for an agenda item that is pending. That's a thing you're welcome to come to as well.
No further comments. We can go to the department update.
Okay, so there are several things on the agenda. I'm going to add one, which is the event that's happening tomorrow. So I'll talk about when we get to that. So you guys have all been really supportive of the Nurse Family Partnership Program, and I'm not going to go into another description because I think you've all heard about it. But you all knew that the way it was looking, we would be running out of funding by the end of 2016, and we'd have to do something.
Sorry,
that's great. It's like that with my little report. So we actually asked the board to tap into the fund balance for, there's a mental health sales tax that was passed a number of years ago. And because the economy has been doing really well, that sales tax has been, the amount of reserve in that sales tax, the reserve fund has been increasing and hasn't been spent. So the board granted us actually $1.1 million out of that reserve fund to keep the Nurse Family Partnership going not only through 2016, but through 2017. And that's going to give us enough, that's going to give us enough time. We're working with community partners. We've got an issue where revenues are basically stagnant for the most part, but expenses keep going up, especially around labor, you know, wages, benefits, and all that. So we really need some sort of sustainable way of keeping the Nurse Family Partnership going. This will buy us enough time to actually work with some community partners that are very interested in keeping going. It's got a great return on investment. It deals with adverse childhood experiences, and we're very optimistic that we're going to be able to find some sustainable funding for it. We won't have to stop accepting new clients to the program. So that was, and you guys provided all kinds of support. Some of you have testified. I think a couple of you, I think Joan, you were there. Paul, I think you were there as well, testified for it. So that was fact in action, and it really helped. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about that. Okay. Item number two. Every year there's public health community awards. And the awards are given both to an organization as well as an individual. And there's several honorable mentions. They're all incredible applicants, but the winner of the Public Health Community Award for an individual was Joan Cayley, who's FAC member. I can read this. I'm going to read what was said and what the counselors noted, but there's a lot more to this because we all know Joan. Joan's been an incredible support and leader in the community around public health and prevention, and has been with this Public Health Advisory Council since its inception, I believe. So I'm just going to read this. What was said is, Joan Cayley's dedication to promoting public health includes serving on the Clark County Public Health Advisory Council since its formation in 2003, consistently advocating for health and all policies. A registered nurse and professor of nursing, Joan has motivated countless students. When I say our student, you couldn't do better than get some mentoring from Joan, so you're here.
Right.
Has motivated countless students over the decades, and many of them come to our meetings, many of whom now serve our community. Her many publications and public speaking engagements influence healthcare direction and priorities across the entire state. Her extensive community involvement includes membership with the Council for the Homeless and serving as a Vancouver Housing Authority Commissioner and Board Director for Bridgeview Housing. And I'm going to give you a sideline, is that Joan, as a leader, really sees the connection between social determinants and health and has been a leader for all of us around and an influence on all of us. In 2014, Joan Cayley was inducted into the Washington State Nursing Hall of Fame. So there's a lot more we can say about Joan, but I think it was a very well-deserved community award.
Thank you very much.
Okay, county changes. How many of you have been reading the Columbian? The county has basically restructured, is reorganizing, and the Department of Department of Environmental Services is being reorganized. So what that means is there will, as of July 1st, there will not be a Department of Environmental Services. So several of those programs within divisions within the Department of Environmental Services are going elsewhere. So responsibility for environmental permit applications, including critical areas, wetlands, forest practices, those are going to move to the Department of Community Development. Responsibility for clean water services, stormwater management, and vegetation management will move to Public Works. And then responsibility for solid waste, sustainability, and environmental education will move to Public Health. So we're getting approximately 13, 14 staff. Is it 13 the latest, Jeff, or is it 14?
14 positions.
Okay, some of them, one or
few of them are vacant.
The bottom line is, this is gonna save the county a lot of money, but even more important than that, these services, including the services we're getting, really fit well with public health. So if you take a look at the public health statutes around solid waste, public health has a huge involvement in that, because the whole concept of solid waste is, one of the big parts of solid waste is really protecting groundwater, which many people use for drinking purposes. So it is a public health program. There's also components of environmental education in this, and there's the WSU Extension is part of this. They operate things like the Heritage Farm. Our chronic disease program is all about sustainable agricultural practices and having that available in our community, having healthy food available. So a lot of this, a lot of the move really makes sense. So we are going to be increasing our size, I guess I would say, by an additional 14 positions as of July 1st, and we're already beginning the transition planning around that. I don't know whether anybody has any questions about that.
Oh, and it's not uncommon for public health to have these services.
No, if you look at if you look at local health jurisdictions around the state, this is really pretty typical. So it fits really well. Any other questions about that?
So did that kind of play into your involvement? I saw you quoted in the paper for the waste management as it ties in with the casino.
That's the next topic that I'm gonna bring up. That's a good, yeah, that's a great segue into the next. So I don't know if I need to go through the whole history of this, but as you know, there's a casino that's under construction in La Centre, or outside of La Centre, and the statute, and now I know it by heart because I've been involved in this, is RCW 36.70A.110, and there's a paragraph 4 that I'm going to get into in a minute, but the tribe originally, when they're constructing this casino, it's outside the urban growth area of La Centre. So it's on tribal land, it's on reservation land. And the tribe wanted to be able to hook up to the La Centre wastewater sewage treatment facility, which would have required an exception from that particular law about extending urban services into the rural area. And there was opposition to that idea, I think from our previous board, as well as the Grand Ronde tribe, and as well as some of the card rooms up in La Centre. So they were not allowed to hook up into the sewer in La Centre. La Centre wanted that because, and that would have cost the tribe $3 million to do that. La Centre wanted it because it helped pay off the debt service on their sewer system. When the tribe was not allowed to do that, they decided to build to treat the waste on site and build a deep well injection system. It's kind of a membrane system that would take the effluent from their septic effluent, put it through this membrane system, which can work really well. Actually, what comes out of that is potable water, and then that's injected into the ground, deep into the ground, and instead of hooking up to the sewer system. The cost for that is around $14 million. So they had a financial incentive to hook into the sewer, but they were not allowed to, so they developed this other plan. We were asked to weigh in on this by the current council about a month ago, and we have some concerns about the plan for the injection. And it's not so much that this thing can't be done. These systems can work. Our concern was that there was no local state monitoring of this system. This system would be monitored by the tribe. I believe they would be making some reports to the EPA, but even the EPA may be limited because we're dealing with nation to nation, sovereign nations here. So our concern was, while these things can be operated safely, they can break down, and without any local or state monitoring, we were concerned that the system, it requires maintenance, and these membrane systems can fail. And we were concerned we'd end up with a large amount of septic material being pumped underground, putting the sole source aquifer, the Troutdale Aquifer, which is the sole source of drinking water for lots of people, at risk. The La Centre sewer system is monitored locally, and the state has oversight of that, unlike this system that the state would have no oversight of. And the worst thing that can happen, not that it's a good thing, but if the LaCenter plant had a problem, the sewage would go into the Lewis River. And while that's bad, it would eventually be washed out, as opposed to having a septic system go deep underground and put the aquifer at risk. So our concern was about monitoring, and not just monitoring for septic material, but also for things called personal care products, which antibiotics or medications that we take that we go to the bathroom and that go down as well. Of course, with proper treatment, you can prevent most of it, but if there was a problem and it wasn't monitored, these materials could theoretically get into the groundwater as well. So our concern has been, since we've been involved in this, was the monitoring system. And we would rather, so back to that statute that I mentioned, subparagraph 4, basically says, in extending urban services into the rural, outside the urban growth boundary, there's an exception if you can demonstrate a public health necessity. And that's basically the wording. And we wrote a memo to Councilor Bolt, Chair Bolt, basically saying we would recommend that the tribe be allowed to hook into the sewer system. It's a lot cheaper. This system that they're building, this membrane system, is going to be about $14 million versus $3 million for hooking into the sewer. And that's why the tribe originally wanted to do that. We have no idea how much money the tribe has already put into building this deep well injection system. The bottom line is, this is going to go before, our recommendation is going to go before the Board of Health. We moved up the meeting because time is of the essence. The more the tribe puts in funding and construction into this this deep well injection system, the more we get to the point of no return. So that's why this is on the agenda. We're moving this up. It's on the agenda for the Board of Health tomorrow at 10:30. So that's where I was quoted in the paper about that. The tribe has not made any decision on the decision to reverse course would have to come from the tribal council. And I don't know where they're at on this, but our recommendation is to allow the tribe to hook into the sewer system is the safest thing to do. We're concerned with a spill. Once it gets into the ground, it gets very expensive and you try removing that stuff, but it's very, very difficult, and that's our big concern. So that's on the agenda for tomorrow. I don't know if anybody has any questions about that. I don't know if you want to weigh in as a water person on that, but I know we've talked about it a little bit, but.
Yeah, I read the story, and I think that explanation is pretty, sums it up very nicely and quite well.
I got the water people saying I've summed it up well. It makes me feel a little bit better.
It really is a oversight, and pulling the thing out, like getting it out of there once it's in there is a real problem. But yeah, the only other thing I would add would be those operators or those people that work at that LaCenter plant, they're professionals, that's what they do, they're wastewater treatment people, and the tribe would probably employ similar folks, but they don't want to be, I can't imagine that they want to be in the business of wastewater treatment.
And even the LaCenter folks who are real professionals, the state has oversight
of the operators.
There is no state oversight of the casino, the deep well injection system. And even the federal oversight concerns me in terms of the EPA and how responsive they would be. And even, you know, we're going to have our prosecuting attorney there as well. But even if the EPA finds something, I think it's kind of like nation to nation. So, you know, it's kind of like if Canada were on an aquifer and dumped something in there, it would be, you know, the leaders of the nations talking to each other. The bottom line is we've got folks who live in this community who are on, get their drinking water out of that aquifer, and that's what our concern is. So, yeah.
Are the county councilors considering doing a kind of a health hazard or potential health hazard declaration, or is that something that's maybe
well, the word emergency has been brought up, public health emergency, but I looked and, you know, I talked to the county prosecuting attorney. If you look at that statute, all you have to basically say is public health necessity. So I'm hoping that that works pretty well. I mean, I don't know that we have an emergency this moment, but if there were a spill, that would be a public, but that would be kind of too late. So.
Well, I think that's a way for them to justify to extend it outside their boundary.
Well, the statute basically says to extend it outside the boundary, all you have to do is demonstrate a public health necessity.
And then I read somewhere, in order to do that, that declaration has to be approved by the state. Is that
correct? So we're actually talking to the state, and I believe we're, I don't think it has to be approved by the state, but we're talking to DOH, and hopefully we'll get a letter of support.
Because I know when I worked here, you know, we declared a couple times in some subdivisions, and it was just basically the governing board on it. And we didn't have to take it to the state.
Yeah, this is really different because the injection system is on reservation land. So it's not on, the county doesn't have jurisdiction over reservation land. That's what makes it a bit more tricky. I mean, the hope that I have is that, I mean, the tribe originally, that was their plan. They wanted to hook into the sewer.
Do they not have to go through any, like, EIS or any kind of, planning before building something like this and defining some type of, they don't have to do that?
Not, they're not on, we and the state have no jurisdiction over what goes on reservation.
We don't permit them, we don't require, we can't enforce a building code.
The problem with
road standards or anything else.
The aquifer doesn't respect national boundaries, though. That's what the issue is.
Right, that is, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, John.
I was going to say, on the planning end, so EPA and the federal government, they set the laws and the guidelines, Safe Drinking Water Act, all of that stuff, and they've delegated primacy or the enforcement of those to the states. So the tribe complies with the rule at the federal level, but there's no primacy. There's no, that's where they're at. They're actually, the wastewater plant, in my understanding, is they comply with the rule that EPA sets. EPA makes a determination that they've complied with the rule, and that's it. That's the plan.
And to get the sewer from the junction there to the center, that's been looked at before and even went into some design work at times or feasibility or cost studies and everything. So
I think we're talking about the stub of the intake to the sewer system is literally inches or feet away from where they could hook up. I mean, it's pretty, I don't know if I'm exaggerating a little bit, but no, it's pretty close.
You know, I can remember years ago when we talked about this on the council, and if we think about, there was so much opposition to the casino. We even looked at some of the literature about how casinos deteriorate the health of a community. And so I think some of that is why there was, they were trying to make a casino not be built. And so,
right.
And that's, because La Center, the tribe wanted to connect
yes.
to La Center. And it was because of the other issues of us wanting to not have a tribe. I remember talking about some tribes back on the East Coast, one of the tribes that starts with an M, has a big casino. And the same kind of issue about there was tremendous opposition to because of the jobs and the health. And, I mean, there were all kinds of issues, but then it sort of went away and went on the back burner because they had to get approval for that land to do it. So I hope this is successful because it's where it started, and I think people's feelings about the casino being sort of evil and nasty there are still some concerns about it, but I think those have diminished.
Yeah, the casino's going in. I think the unintended consequence of some of that opposition was the tribe just said, you're not going to let us hook up to the sewer, we'll build our own system. And they're doing due diligence. I mean, they're looking at a system that could work well. The problem is there's no monitoring or thing goes bad. Yeah. Somebody else going to say something about it? Okay. If you guys want to come and listen or testify, you're more than welcome tomorrow. But there's other stuff we're going to get into that we need you for, too. So
then just real quickly, was any of the opposition, because you mentioned that a couple of groups that might have been opposed to hooking up Ridgefield, was that just kind of more political opposition, trying to be a stumbling block to having that casino built? Is that what that was?
And was La Center, not Ridgefield.
Or, I mean, La Center, otherwise was there a valid policy reason why it's not connect to Ridgefield at all?
La Center, but you got Ridgefield on your mind. Everything that Joan said is basically, she's got the history there. I think there was There were any, I can't read the motives of everybody who was opposed to it. I'm sure it ran a whole, you know, there's a whole range of reasons why people may have opposed it.
I also suspect that the city of La Center knows that they're about to lose a lot of card room tax revenue, and that they could also pick up the revenue and the utility tax from the tribe.
So La Center has been in favor of doing this, I think, from the beginning.
Absolutely.
Because their sewer system is designed to handle this. And I think you can argue about whether the card rooms are legitimate. I mean, I'm not an economic, it's not my area of expertise, but there's going to be a lot of business generated. This thing is going to be huge because it's going to be the casino that's closest to the, I mean, the other closest casino to Portland is in McMinnville. And that's a good 40 miles. This is like 20 miles from downtown Portland, at most. It's going to be big, very big.
Should help out the grid problem.
Well,
what grid problem?
There's a bridge problem?
Put a toll on the bridge.
We can talk about, I don't want to talk about the Columbia River crossing.
Can we declare the bridge a public health problem?
So, let's go ahead and the growth management plan and growing healthier report.
So, can I go ahead and introduce Gordy? Yeah.
Skip the topic.
Adding travel reps to
that. I'm sorry, what?
Adding the travel representative to that.
Oh, I left that out. So, one of the things that's right, thank you, I'm sorry. One of the recommendations, this whole thing brought up for us, the thought that we haven't had tribal representative on FAC, not even since its inception. And we wanted to know what you guys, I don't know if we need a vote or anything like that, a recommendation to the board about adding a representative from the tribe to the Public Health Advisory Council.
It ought to be a change in the bylaws.
Yes.
In addition to the bylaws.
I think it would be great, especially since, you know, the Cowlitz tribe is doing, you know, I know that they're looking forward to the, you know, having talked with some of the folks from the Cowlitz tribe, you know, a lot of that, the revenue from that's going to go right back into, you know, their health services. And so I think it'd be great if we could have somebody from the tribe working with us. I think it would really inform us and inform them in terms of some of the issues where we could, you know, it's really nation to nation, but I think it'd be really great to have a tribal representative.
Do we need something formal, or do you need a bylaws change? Or
we would have to do a bylaws change. So what we could do, if you guys agree, is edit and bring you a draft of the.
I move that we direct staff to draft a bylaw change that would include tribal representation.
Second.
Okay.
Third. Verbal vote on it. Everybody
aye.
For it.
Aye.
Aye. Nay.
Okay, well, would this require, you know, I know the Board of Counselors appoints people, so would the bylaws have to be approved by, they would be approved by us and then go to the council?
Yes, I think your recommendation, you'll make a recommendation of bylaws change when we bring that to the Board of Health.
Yeah.
And somebody here, it would be great to have folks from here, up here when it gets on their agenda. And we haven't spoken, I don't know whether we should mention this to the tribe or
probably be a good idea.
Might be a good idea rather than surprise them. So
yeah.
We get your direction, go ahead and do that as well. Great.
Actually, if anybody has a recommendation, if you know anybody that's a member of the tribe that you think would be interested in serving on the council, that would be really awesome. You know, after the meeting or later, shoot an email letting us know some needs.
Well, I know they have a clinic here.
Not in our
building. Not in this building, but I know that they were at Project Homeless Connect. That's when I talked to two of them from the tribe about, you know, their health clinic. And I mean, I was really impressed with them. So
There's also a board member on the Regional Health Alliance board, Steve Klutz, who's a tribal member. So if it's okay with you, I might mention this to Steve and that we're talking about doing this.
Sure.
Great. So the main agenda, if I can, is that okay, Mark?
Yeah, go ahead.
So you guys championed the Growing Healthier report. It was also known as the health element. And that was and Gordy will go through you're going to go through the history as well, but it is now, it has been incorporated, parts of it, word for word, have been incorporated into the into the county comprehensive plan that's being brought before the joint meeting of the Planning Commission and the Board of County Councilors. There's going to be two meetings coming up. We'll tell you about that. But this is an opportunity for you guys as FAC to weigh in on all the work that you've done in terms of making this a reality in the county comprehensive plan. So I won't talk anymore. We got Gordy here from community planning. Is it okay?
Yeah, go ahead, Gordy.
Sure. All right. Thank you, Ellen. And thanks for having me tonight. I talked to Roxanne and Ellen, and I had a meeting with Oliver, the community planning director, two, 3 weeks ago, and they suggested I come and one of us come and talk to you tonight. I don't know how much you know. I don't know how much you don't know. I don't know how much you want to know. So I put together a little PowerPoint. I'll run through this. I took 75 slides from the last one I did and condensed it down to about 20 or so. Because a lot of it is stuff that it affects the comprehensive plan update, but it's not really related to what I think the topic you want to talk about tonight. So let's get on with the first slide. So this is here's the big agenda. This is what the comprehensive plan, hopefully you can see this update, is all about. We're on a schedule to be done hopefully by June 30th. That's my last count was 44 days from today. I don't know whether we're going to make it. There's lots of reasons for that. We don't need to go into the history. You guys read the newspapers just as much as we do. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the adoption process where we're at. Mentioned the community framework plan and countywide planning policies because that does relate to the Growing Healthy report in kind of a negative way. And then these are I've used this PowerPoint to cover all these things. I just basically blanked out took out all the chunk here and left these major headaches. So when I pulled in the comprehensive plan text and policies, that's what we'll end up talking about because that's where we're adding language that's from the Growing Healthy report and the Asian Residence report. So we're amending the plan text and policies. We're proposing to change the comprehensive plan map. If you haven't seen it, it's kind of a psychedelic looking thing with lots of nice colors on it that gives you the comprehensive plan designations and zoning for all parcels in the county. We've done a capital facilities plan because we're planning for another 128,000 people over the next 20 years. And so that's, as we all know, growth has costs associated with it. And so we have to put a plan in place that says, how are we gonna pay for that growth? So it's a state law. Most of you know about the Growth Management Act. That particular provision is called the concurrency provision, which for lack of a better way to explain it is you pay as you grow. And then capital facilities financial plan, where's the money coming from? Very good question. This you'll want to pay attention to at some point because the estimated shortfall right now for the next 20 years is about $160 million. Material Atlas amendments, those were Material Atlas is where is a transportation document which basically says where roads are and where we hope to put them at some point. Impact fees, you're going to hear more about. We fund some schools, some parks work, and of course some traffic improvements by impact fees. These are fees that we charge developers to build new houses or for new growth. And of course they turn around and up the price of the house and sell them to people. And so we're getting a lot of pushback on this because of affordability issues. You're going to hear a lot more about that in the next few weeks. And then we have to do an environmental review per CEPA, which is the State Environmental Policy Act. I'm not going to talk about that at all because that's basically what we're doing. So, overview of the adoption process. Here's some dates. We've already had the April 27th work session, obviously, the May 4th board work session, the May 5th Planning Commission work session. May 19th and May 24th are the two meetings that Alan just alluded to. These are joint public hearings between the Planning Commission, and the Board of County Councilors. They'll be over in the hearing room in the Public Service Building, 6:30. It's one hearing. We're just spreading it over two nights. You testify once, and get your 3 minutes of fame if you want to come. And we're part of my presentation tonight is to urge you to come and testify about things that are important to you and this body. On June 2nd, then, the Planning Commission goes away, and they'll deliberate on what they heard. The reason we hold joint hearings is so the public only has to testify once, and the decision, both groups of decision-makers hear the testimony together. So we don't drag them downtown for a Planning Commission meeting, and then hearing, and then drag them down again for a board hearing. But June 2nd, Planning Commission will deliberate. They'll come up with their recommendation. June 21st, the board deliberates, comes up with its recommendation, and with a little luck, will be done by the end of June. So this is a little hard to see. These are all the elements and things that we're working on. Suffice it to say that everything that's got a check mark is done. You can see there's still a few things, basically over here in the adoption side, that we're not done with because we're in the local adoption process. So, go ahead. The community framework plan was a 50-year vision, and this was adopted with the first county's first growth management plan in 1994. It hasn't changed a lot since then. We looked at our comprehensive land update this time around and said, you know, we brought all this land into the urban growth areas in 2007. The economy tanked in 2008. Most of that land is still there. This might be a good time after 20 years to go back and revisit the community framework plan. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But this is not something the county can do, can change unilaterally, although if you, there's certainly some language in there that if you read some of the comments on some Facebook postings, you would think that there's some kind of radical agenda out there. And I can see, if you go back and look at some of the wording in this framework plan, you can see where maybe some of that stems from. So next, we also have a set of countywide planning policies. These are policies that the cities adopted and the county adopted. Again, can't be changed unilaterally by the county. The state law requires these because what has to happen is, even though the county is the lead, we have to make sure that our comprehensive plans are consistent with the city's comprehensive plans and vice versa. That's called internal consistency. And you can read the purpose of countywide planning policies. This larger presentation is on our website too, as the only. So if you don't have a copy, it looks like some of you do. That's great. But what we did, why this is important, is last summer we went to the board and we said we want to include, because the cities agreed, we want to include the growing health report and the aging readiness report in the countywide planning policies. We've been out to city councils. They were in favor of this. We went to the board, and the other thing we don't have in the policy, countywide planning policies, is a policy to amend the policies. So we said, well, we should put a process in here for amended. By the way, here's some amendments. And the board said no, for a variety of reasons. It would take too long to explain. So basically, the countywide planning policies aren't changing, other than we're updating a couple of the references. That because of state law change. So this is where we first got talking about how we were going to incorporate the Growing Healthy Report and the Aging Readiness Report into the comp plan. So that was last June or July, exactly when that was. So go on. So we'll come back to this. This is just these are the series of slides. So we had to go back up. So one more. So comprehensive plan text, we'll talk about that in a moment. We're going to get to the particulars. Next, we need to update Title 40, which is the county's development code, basically the unified development code, because there's some things we're doing that require code changes. Capital facilities plans, and again, in the big presentation I had, there used to be slides that followed each of these. I took them out because they're boring. They're really boring. Next, here to get a capital facilities plan overview. We have to look at land use priorities. We have to have public facilities to support them, and we have to have the financial capacity to pay for them. If you look at growth in 20 years, if you see something that's going to become a big deal for public health in terms of provision of service, you got to figure out how we're going to provide that service. Who's going to pay for it? Most of it, though, has to do with these things: transportation, which is a county responsibility in the unincorporated area, parks, water, sewer, stormwater, public safety. And we have to have adequate funding or capacity for the next 20 years. So planning horizon for this go-round is 2035. So, next. Capital facilities financial plan is how you, where the money's coming from, what funds, you know, whether it's property tax, sales tax, REIT, you know, grants, impact fees, those sorts of things. Again, our trail allowance amendments, impact fees, we talked about, we charge these again for schools, for parks, and for transportation. And there's the FSEIS. So, all right, go ahead. Let's get that one. All right, so back to the comprehensive plan text. This is a growing monthly report. If you haven't seen it, I just printed out the first couple of pages so I can become more familiar with it. I didn't work on this. Brendan Hagerty, who many of you knew and know, and Colette Anderson in our shop were kind of the joint project managers.
But he's got the old champion, dude.
Yeah.
I think you all took different chapters, yeah. Right?
Yeah, so you're very familiar with this. You're more familiar with it than I am. I mean, there's lots of chapters. You have access to healthy food, active transportation, land use, parks and open space. Suffice it to say that every one of these things has a planning component to it. When you looked at it through a public health lens, we're saying these all have planning consequences. You know, if you're talking about, you know, mobility, if you're talking about people getting out and getting exercise, where are you going to put the bike lane? You know, where are you going to put the sidewalk?
Gordy, a lot of these folks were not on the council at the time. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So next slide.
There were 8 social determinants that had chapters or subsections.
Yeah, I think the you're right. I counted as 8. So I mean, I'm not going to go into the details of the plan. What I'm going to do is tell you what we try to do to incorporate this. The environmental elements. Well, the comprehensive plan is made up of elements. There are 8, I think, or 9 required elements, and then the county at its discretion can have, you know, optional elements. The closest we probably get here is parks and recreation is a required element. And the rural element, a transportation element, a housing element, a land use element, and I'd probably leave a few.
It wasn't the growing healthy report originally proposed as a health element. It would be a whole. It would have been
right,
a whole health
a standalone element. Chapter in the comprehensive plan. And I don't know what happened. I don't know why that was
the previous
not accepted. But when we looked at the document, because we had all this land that was brought in the 2007 comprehensive plan update. We said we don't need to expand our boundaries. We've got plenty of land for the next 20 years because of the big recession. And so county community planning staff said, well, you know, we're not gonna because we don't have to spend a whole lot of time focusing on land use, we're gonna focus more on what do our documents say and what do our policies say, and how do we actually we wanted to basically toss out the entire document and rewrite it, reorganize it. We like the way the city of Vancouver, their table of contents. We looked at a number of different tables of contents, and that was our goal. And we didn't quite get there because we got sidetracked on some other things along the way. Yeah, Alan's laughing, I'm not laughing.
Comedy and tragedy are two sides of the same
coin. So, yeah, right. You laugh all the time. And so our goal essentially was to rewrite the document. Include things in here that were basically their county policy. How many people know that the county has a sustainability policy? Raise your hand. Right, exactly. This was adopted in 2007. And there it is on the right. And I'm not going to read it to you, but we thought that needs to be in the county's comprehensive plan. We're getting some pushback from some board members who basically have said, and that really frames the discussion. We're not going to put anything in the comprehensive plan that isn't required by the state. So if it's not one of these mandatory elements, nix it. And so we thought that's interesting. Economic development chapter, which we have, isn't a requirement. We thought that might be important to the board. Schools, not a required element, which we have. Environmental element, not required. Annexation might be of interest to the cities. I'm sure the counties are really interested, but cities are interested in that. Historic preservation, archaeological resources, cultural resources, not required. So all that stuff would go out. And still may. I mean, we're not done yet. So that's what brings us to tonight. So here's our what's new. Inclusion of a new goal, policy, and strategy on sustainability reflecting the Clark County Sustainability Policy adopted in 2007 and the Growing Healthier Report adopted in 2012. Next slide. So here's the goal. This one's going to raise an eyebrow or two, I'm reasonably sure. We have such sort of leftist agenda items as climate change and food production. You Google on the comp plan today, you won't find the word food mentioned anywhere on today's comp plan. Why is that? Good question. We're hoping to change that. We think that's, as professional planners, we think that's a 21st century issue that we ought to have some language in the document. And that's really what this is all about.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Is there a, and I'm just curious from your perspective, is there a clear distinction between food production and agriculture? Are those the same in your mind, or are those different?
There's a couple different ways to answer the question. The Growth Management Act talks about, one of our requirements is to designate land that's suitable for long-term commercial agriculture viability and long-term forest viability. That's all it says about it. And it says you'll designate it based on, and there's a bunch of criteria. Interestingly enough, it doesn't talk about the activity of forestry or ag. It just talks about the suitability of the land to do that. But there's some other things going on in the county complement that. Food System Council being one of them. I've been participating with them for, 2 years now. Greg, how long have I been coming to those meetings? It's been quite a while. Probably I think before you were on the group. So there's a couple different ways you can answer the question. A lot of people equate food production with agricultural production, but a lot of ag isn't necessarily about food, at least not for us. Hay, pasturage, that sort of thing is important, but a lot of that is for horses. Horses are a big agriculture activity in the county, as many of you probably know. Of course, if you're a Lagler, you need pasture for dairy cows, which of course produce milk. So lots of different ways to answer the question. And lots of different strategies for how you might approach the issue. And that's one of the issues as we see it. So this is the policy language. Clark County is committed to fostering safe, secure future, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is actual language that will go in the document. So again, next slide. Transportation element. Where we're also going to end. Here we talk more about the County Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, which is basically getting exercise, having safe places to get exercise. There's here again, this is key 5.2.9. Here's talks about the, bless you, fund construction and bicycle and pedestrian improvements. Here's the key policy of the county's Bike and Ped Master Plan, the Growing Healthier Report, and meets the requirements of RCW 367A0706 VII. I believe 6 VII, although I couldn't swear to it, says one of the things you have to look at is to incorporate policies in your comp plan around physical activity. That's in the Growth Management Act. We take that seriously. All right, so environmental element and the transportation element, we're proposing language. And again, it just alludes to the Growing Healthier Report. Next slide. Housing element, include policies are recommended from the Aging Readiness Plan and Growing Healthy Report. What do they look like? Next slide. Encourage the creation that is how energy efficient, resource efficient, as how you are calling. Principles of universal design. So we're not so much talking about the Growing Healthy Report, we're now on the Aging Readiness Report. Allusion was just made to Commission on Aging, they just met this afternoon. They've been going about, 3 years now? Maybe 4 years? Something that Councillor Bolt got started and was very much interested in when he was Commissioner Bolt back in 2010 and 11. Next slide. And community design is the last place we're proposing to put language. Update language and goals, reflect recommendations from community plans and reports. Here again, Growing Health Report, Aging Readiness. So next slide. Here's complete streets. My God, I think that was... never mind. Leave out the editorial comments. Encourage the development of urban activity centers that foster community identity and reduce reliance on automobiles. You'll hear about that. It's called the war on cars, is how that'll be characterized. Promote improved public health by encouraging integrating land use and street patterns with sidewalk and recreation. Agenda 21 all the way, baby. That's it. Encourage development of age-friendly communities that have affordable and appropriate housing. Pretty straightforward. So I think there's, is there one more slide here? No. So those are the things that we're doing to take the work that you all have been involved with and incorporate a comprehensive plan.
By the way, on that age-friendly community also includes adequate mobility options as well. So.
So that's pretty much what we're about. The question is, why I'm here is that if you feel strongly about these, please come to the next two meetings we're having, the 19th and 24th, and say so. Because as I've indicated, there's at least two members of the board who don't want to put anything in the plan that's not actually required by the state. This isn't, technically is not required. Transportation element is required, but what we say about transportation is really up to what the local board wants. And the same thing about environment, same thing about community design, same thing about housing. So I've said a lot, maybe too much. Don't quote me. But I went through this pretty fast, but I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Well, I think it's imperative that we. Some of this is our work. We spent over 2 years working on this Growing Healthier report. And I'm glad that there's at least some of it there. That, you know, in all of those chapters, there was proposals, and maybe that'll get, you know, the Growing Healthier report was an incredible amount of work by the council and by the public health staff. And so I think that we should actually, much like we did when we had the hearings on the Growing Healthier report, that we need to, as a council, make testimony in support of these changes.
Well, it even went to the Planning Commission, and they adopted it.
Yeah.
Well, or they recommended it.
The board adopted it.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it by resolution, but they approved and said this should be part of the comprehensive plan. We've gone back and listened to the tape. So what I suggest you do is and I'm not sure how you do this, but just listening to some of the comments that are made about the characterization of this, you know, the spin that's put on the work that you did. It really is quite fascinating to listen to how it's described. I think you'd be shocked, I mean, if you heard some of the words that we've heard. And I don't know whether this will stay in the plan. I'm assuming it will, but it won't unless people come out and say, this is a 21st century issue. We've done the work, it's what was adopted, or at least recognized or acknowledged by a previous board, and we need to get on with it. So.
Well, you know, some of the work the Growing Healthier report, I think there should be more of it in there. You know, the whole chapter on climate change and human health and how to build, because, you know, we are dealing with that, and some of the recommendations that were in that report about that particular topic, you know, unfortunately, I don't have to wait for the next round, but...
It was an entire element. It was that optional element no longer there, but it still exists. It's on our website, and it's not going away.
And it's still in the Growing Healthier report, you know.
Right. But there is some material that's taken from that's in now incorporated. Do you guys have the exact language, the wording that Cordy had up there on the slides? Do you have that in your packet?
Yeah,
those different areas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. If you go on the board's grid for the meeting for the 19th or the 24th, there's a document there called Issue Paper 8.1, and all this language is there. So, I mean, that's, you could go to there right now and download that. It's about 15 or 16 pages, and it basically summarizes all the kind of things that are new that we're proposing that the Planning Commission needs to recommend on and the Council needs to vote on. So all this is where, when I put this together, I just copied all the stuff and took out all the rationale lines and just put the actual policy language in this PowerPoint. So, yes, there's a whole lot more. We're happy with this level. This is a foothold. But like I said, we as professional planners are trying to update our comprehensive plan to get it into the 21st century. So.
Is there some specific, does the council want to put something together in writing? And if so, is there some specific language that you guys can incorporate and then the folks who testify can actually Well, can just, if I can refer to that?
I think we need to support every bit of this language right here. Don't you agree, Mark?
Yeah, no, I think so. And I know Gordy can't say some things. Maybe I could say.
Try me.
It's amazing what some people are saying that we did, that we plotted or conspired to make county policy, and it wasn't brought to proper public notice or discussion.
We were charged by the commissioner to do this.
And but there's an element of the community that it, when they start talking about it, it's almost like conspiracy. I don't know if I'm, it's just, when I heard that, it just really blew me away.
It's pretty amazing. It's Councilman Durr calls it social engineering. So be it.
But that's exactly why the board needs to hear from you, because you are representatives of the community. So the folks who are alleging what you just said come to a lot of board meetings. And this is an opportunity for you guys to talk about the process and, you know, how
I think that we need to say, you know, that the Growing Healthy Report was developed charged by our county commissioners at that time. And it came about after we were talking about health disparities and we were showing clips of the Unnatural Causes documentary series. And the thing that came out of that, especially as we were talking about housing, you know, the social determinants, as we were talking about that, and then that's where we were directed as the council to develop a report that the commissioners at that time could use. And so and then the Growing Healthy Report had two hearings before the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners at that time. And we had, what, 40 people come and give testimony? And there were only two people that gave testimony that was really perceived as negative. And it really wasn't negative. It was a suggestion. One of them was somebody from the port saying to change something. They wanted to keep the Mill Plain corridor. Yeah. Is it Mill Plain or Fort? You know, to the port. Mm-hmm. They were two very constructive, beneficial feedback on those two. But everything else, we were stunned that people came out of the woodwork to support the work of this, because it was well publicized. And
we had public meetings too. Yeah. We didn't have one of the bands.
Yes.
The library and,
yes.
So we went out and got public input. So, yeah.
What I'm thinking maybe.
So that should be in the, I mean, I think what I'm saying is that should be in the letter that this was developed and there was lots of opportunity for input and we heard that input. And I mean, we don't want to dwell on it, but I think we want to, for the record, say that there was no conspiracy.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I think. By far, we should state the history and the processes and everything we went through.
Well, your opportunity is Thursday and Tuesday because you're going to have both the Planning Commission and the board around the same table.
A question I have, some of those meetings I've been to in the past on this topic, the public doesn't really have an opportunity to testify. Do we at these two meetings?
Yes, these are listening meetings.
Okay. So the other thing you can do besides writing something, I guess, is that you could decide to vote today as a council to support what Gordy has, what they've included in the comprehensive plan. So you can do that as well. And then when you testify, you can say, if you choose to do so, that, you know, FAC is on record as supporting these. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
You can do that as well. I hope we do that.
My sense of urgency is that the time is now. If you want to testify, you have Thursday and Tuesday, where you have both decision-making bodies, all of them, the plan recommendation, in the room. And not only that, but a TV audience.
Yeah.
So now is the time. We probably should have had this conversation last month, but better late than never. If you champion the work you've done, this is the time to turn out, and say so.
What time is it on?
6:30 on Thursday the 19th and on Tuesday the 24th.
And I think there was a vote in a second, or a motion in a second.
Yeah, I heard it in a second. So. Okay, get everybody that's in favor of writing a letter and documenting what we've done and the positions that. And
we support this.
Yeah, we support this.
That it honestly and truthfully reflects the conclusions of this body, and the outreach that this board has done into the community. I think that kind of language should be included. Yeah.
And you want to see it highlighted in the comprehensive plan.
And then we want to see it highlighted.
That's what we're asking.
That's what I would amend. I would amend your motion to reflect that
language change.
Do we have a second on the amendment?
Second.
Yeah, okay. Everybody in favor, say aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Nay. Sounds like it's 100%.
So now somebody
writes a letter.
Writes a letter.
You can get a letter. I mean, I'll go to one of them. I'm not sure which one I can go to, but I will go to one.
I'll make one.
Okay. So a letter needs to be generated. Are you directing us to draft a letter?
Yeah.
I'd say if you could draft the letter, then turn it out to everybody.
We got our public information officer here.
I'll take a stab and circulate it.
We need to get something done by before 6:30 on Thursday. And do you guys need to see it? Or do you believe we'll incorporate everything you've said here?
I think it'd probably be best if it could be sent out, but maybe John
for review.
Can we send out so we probably need to get something out to you. I'm sorry about the time crunch tomorrow, so that you can see it and just say yay or nay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Don.
And then we can always add, if we even take that letter, we can still add our own,
Oh, when you testify?
Yes.
Oh, God, yes. You don't want to just sit there.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that you sit there and read the letter.
No. We didn't have it.
You personalize it with your own thoughts.
Send emails. Each of you, send an email to the Board of County Commissioners.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, there's lots of ways to do it. That won't take very long.
And that's all. And Gordy, you have a website also where you're taking public comment.
In Gaystar County is now down because we had to cut off comments so we could get those comments to the Planning Commission and the board. But the comment period is still open for anything. It's just that here's an opportunity to have the Planning Commission and the board in the same room. They're also all here.
So I got to tell you, the opposition to this is well organized, and they will come out. If you watch previous board meetings, they'll come out in large numbers. So the more, not to put the pressure on, the more of you that can, unfortunately, I don't know what your evenings are like on the 17th, on the 19th and the 24th, these hearings can go on for a while because a lot of people sign in. They limit everybody to 3 minutes apiece. Sometimes they go down to two because of the large number of people, but a good showing is really important because the same people keep on coming to meeting after meeting. If you watch it on CBTV, CCTV. Anyway.
So who's going to go? Mark, me, who else? Alan?
Alden.
I'll go, Barry.
Yeah. And again, you have two nights to choose from. So, but I think the more the board hears the message in the Planning Commission, it'll be easier. The more people that mention this, the harder it's going to be for them to say no. And there's plenty of naysayers.
And it provides support for the counselors, the Board of Health members who do want to support this. You going to say something?
Well, a lot of the opposition to it is the rural element too, when I look at this, I'm thinking, it's urban and rural. You probably can't extend it as far in the rural as you do. There's almost like different criteria or standards that you guys maybe develop at some point in time.
Certainly, road standards differ.
Yeah.
For urban and rural, and that's to be expected.
Yeah.
We get done early. Get started. So
I yield my last 20 minutes to the letter writers.
Maybe Yeah, we have a lot of work to do tomorrow.
Yes, so the plan will be is that we'll put the language together, we'll get it out to you all tomorrow. I would imagine that Mark would sign it as the, is that the way that we want to do it, Mark can sign on behalf.
But I think we also should have an attachment of who the members of the council are, so that, you know, it's
yeah,
not...
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Mark can sign
good
it as
idea.
The chair, but then we have the listing of who are the members of the council, and who we represent.
Absolutely, we certainly will do that.
Gordy's happy to take a look. He'll be around tomorrow, take a look at it
excellent.
Also.
Excellent, okay.
Sure,
and then we'll also, we can send you, if Ellen, if you're okay with this, we can send you the contact information where you mentioned that you can email to the council, so we can send you that information too, and you'll get that out.
Yeah, but don't use that as a substitute for showing. Showing
correct.
Up is,
yes.
And it's all on TV, so yeah.
And where did you say that the...
So on the sixth floor of, this is all in the hearing room, right?
Right.
So on the
public
sixth floor
center.
Of the Public Service Center on 13th and Franklin?
Yeah, sixth
Public three. Service Center.
Yes, yeah. It's across the street from the...
Just
know,
north of the courthouse.
On the courthouse.
Okay.
Sorry about that, but youth are welcome to testify too.
Yeah, because it's your future.
It's your future, and you're going to be impacted by this more than some of the older folks here.
I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah.
I'm not trying at all.
No other questions there might be.
Is there any items good anybody would like to discuss on any topic or? Anything on the confidence plan? Any other questions? Or?
Can I just ask a quick question?
Sure.
So, when you're saying that a lot of the same people show up as naysayers and have concerns, is it directly in reference to the work that the board did, or is it just to keep it as minimum as is legally required?
From my observation, they've actually mentioned this report, and that's what's really blown me away. And with that group, I'm not a member of that group, but I have written letters about subject issues to the planning or everything. You know, I've had contact with some of the group and everything, but when they brought up the issue of this and the idea on what they thought we were trying to do and everything, it's pretty amazing.
What
right?
do they think we're trying? You're trying to do. Like, I guess
I think we're trying to. I don't know. We're trying to get it into policy without having public input, I guess, or kind of social engineering, maybe its element to it.
But you were charged by the commissioners at the time. So can those commissioners say, you know, we asked for this growing health area report?
I don't think they asked for it, but I think. We saw a trend for it, and I think even, you know, I think Paul went to a conference in California, if I remember right, about the living environment, things like that. So it was kind of a topic that came to our attention.
So if I can just weigh in on some of this is just a philosophical opposition. We're weighing, which happens a lot in public health around individual rights and including individual property rights and the common good. So some folks believe that we shouldn't be using taxpayer dollars or gas taxes, for example, to build bicycle and pedestrian sidewalks, that roads should just be built, that we should not restrict the use of automobiles in any way. If people want to drive their, you know, they should be able to, the funding should just go to roads, for example, and not to bicycle and pedestrian roads. That's not the way that these tax dollars, for example, should be used. Some folks who have property, especially in the rural areas, want to feel like they can subdivide their property any way they choose to subdivide it. So there's always that, like, that tension between individual rights to do, to drive wherever they want to or whatever, or, you know, versus what makes sense in terms of prevention and the common good, if that makes any sense.
does, and I know that there was a lot of discussions about which growth plan to adopt, and I know that that's ongoing, and with Oliver's involvement too, I've been reading about that in the paper. So I know that there's a lot of conflict that goes on, but I was just wondering, like, what the if the naysayers' comments were more directed towards, like, the rural issues, like you mentioned, which isn't directly tied into the growing healthier. I mean, because
except that, you know, one of the, and Gordy's a lot more of an expert on this than I am, but when you have unrestricted development in the rural areas, there are services that have to go out to those areas.
Right.
So you make a decision to build more roads, and there's an expense associated with that. There's an expense for law enforcement, because then you have to provide protection in those areas. So those are the kind, these planners are, you know, more expert. I don't know if you want to weigh in on any of that.
No, it's a...
No, and I understand that. I mean, because I think that we talked about that too. You know, if you suddenly throw up a new subdivision in the middle of a rural area, you know, there's going to be more traffic, but there's no road, and then there's, you know, all of that. And I was just wondering if that is one of the common elements that keeps coming up, that
well,
it's still over the growth plan itself.
Just without, you know, developing this into a, you know, an hour lecture, which I probably couldn't speak on too anyway. Pre-GMA, there were and still are a lot of smaller parcels in rural Clark County. And when the county adopted its first growth plan, we downzoned a lot of property. What that means is minimum parcel size went from in some cases from 5 acres to 20 acres. Might even happen to some of you or, you know, some of your parents who lived here. And so people say, you know, people argue that's taken away my property right. I happen to disagree, but that's because I'm part of the liberal establishment, leftist, you know, commie planner that worked for you all here at Clark County. So what that means is you had people that had about 20 acres in a 5 acre minimum parcel size with the expectation that someday they might subdivide. They would get 4 or 5 acre parcels. When the property was downzoned to a 20 acre minimum, that they lost that right. They lost that, and I don't want to call it a right, they lost that ability. And so people say to me, you took my property right away, and I say, really? So how much land did you have before GMA? 20 acres. How much land do you have now? 20 acres. What can you do with it? What could you do with it then that you can't do now? Well, nothing, because nothing has changed. It's the ability to make money off of it. And so my standard response is, do you own stock? Do you ever buy stock? So when the stock market crashes, do you sue somebody because you want them? You want somebody to protect your investment? Now land, as we all know, hits a little closer to home, but it's let the buyer beware, I guess. Yes, people lost an opportunity, but they still own the property. They can still do with it what they want, except subdivide it and make money off it. That's the issue. And the group that we're hearing from most want to get rid of GMA and go back to the way zoning was in 1980. And that just can't happen, because the intervening activity was the passage of the Growth Management Act and the adoption of the first plan by the board. Right, wrong, or indifferent, it's what we have today. And I get that. And there's people that say, I have 80 acres and 6 kids. And I want the kids to love the land. We get that. It's important if you want people to stay in family farming or family forestry. But when your minimum parcel size is 40 acres, you can't get 6 into 80. It doesn't work that way. That upsets a lot of people. And so that GMA and the way GMA was implemented with the first board back in 1994 that adopted the county's first plan made the policy call. Now, was the plan challenged? Yes. Were there, I think we set some kind of a record for appeals. There were 62, I think. But the county worked through them, and we've had a reasonably compliant plan. If, you know, things happen, we adopt a plan, it's challenged, we work through those. This plan will probably be challenged, we work through those. And so what we're trying to, there's a group of people that just don't like to be regulated. And to the extent that we try not to, but the that was what we did, what we, I say we, the county, the board, a previous board did 20 years ago, is people haven't forgotten about. And that's what's sort of fueling this current, you know, plus, you know, we've got things going on at the national level, we've got the Tea Party, and, you know, regardless of your politics, we have people that said that, you know, less government, we don't want to spend the money, get out of our face, okay? It's those are the same people that say we left you, that who complain when we leave them alone, that we didn't pay them enough attention because we left them alone. So we actually don't know, because nobody's ever written it down for us, what exactly the problem is. People complain about the agenda and, you know, CRC and tolls and light rail and government oppression and too much regulation. That's all. Those are all generalities. And for me, that doesn't sit very well. Let's talk specifics. Let's talk about your property, what happened to you, what you can do on your parcel, what you can't, what's there, if it's got wetlands, if it's got habitat, if it's got a bald eagle, if you've got, you know, your people next door that are farming. Let's talk specifics. We're not getting that back. You look at Facebook postings and you look at testimony, it's all about generalities. And you can't respond to that. That's really what the really comes down to. My taxes are too high. I get that a lot. You know, I'm sure Alan gets it a lot. If you work for government or government agency, you know, I expect the police chief, you probably even hear it. Okay, let's talk about that. You know, here are the things that decision makers have said are important that your taxes are funding. What are you willing to give up for lower taxes? Well, nothing. Well, end of conversation. Next. So part of what we do is, you know, try to engage people, and some people we've lost. So I don't know if we'll ever get it back. You know, the rural people think we're the enemy. We're at war with rural people. I've seen it in print more than once. We are at war with the rural people.
But it's not all rural people. It's
that's how community planning has been vilified. You know, these folks are living in Uzbekistan. You know, we're oppressing them and keeping them under our thumb and economically. You need to read what's being said about us. Not me, and sometimes it's me in particular. Most of the time it's about Oliver, who's the department head. You've read a lot. It's sad. But that's the situation we're in. And has the board helped in calling that? Certainly not the previous board. Things have gotten better under the current board. But there's still people out that think we're out to ruin the world. And we happen to disagree. We think we've got a document that's full of some good ideas that have been generated not by us, but by people in the community, like you guys, that need to be put out there on the table. And if you don't agree, tell us specifically, what is it about a sidewalk? Is it the cost? Okay, we get that. Do you not want one in front of your house? What's the issue? And it's going to be interesting, because when we are challenged, when we get the plan done, we're actually going to see, and somebody's going to have to actually write down specifically, in writing, what it is that they think we violated in terms of the Growth Management Act. I'm not guessing it's going to be a fairly short list. So we were hearing a lot about, you know, perceptions and agendas and you know, boogeymen and conspiracies and all that. My grandmother used to say, piffle.
How do you really feel about this, Gordon?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be passionate, but I've been drugged through this for a year and a half, and it's starting to get old.
Well, and all the work that you've done, I mean, and Oliver, who's an incredible, you know, he's been at our council several times to talk about this, yeah. You know, how he's been vilified. It's really tragic.
You won't meet a more humble or gracious person on the planet Earth than my boss. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that to anybody. So anyway, enough about that. I'll stick around if you have individual questions. I probably said too much.
I don't know that we answered all your questions or not, but
thank you.
Yeah, I guess I have an info meeting, so I don't know.
You should come. It's part of everybody's education. You should come and see how we are portrayed.
But the, you know, the plan has been through a lot of vetting by a lot of community meetings. I mean, there's a, you know, and the Planning Commission. I mean, this has been universally voted in favor of by the Planning Commission, or made up of community members. It's been vetted across the county, but there's a relatively
I have a very loud, vocal, small, relatively small group of folks who have significant problems with this. And I mean, you can understand some of their feelings on this, but when you kind of look at the whole thing, including the Growing Healthier report, there's good reasons why. I mean, zoning has been around
100 years,
but there was reasons, including public health reasons, zoning was developed.
Exactly.
So there's reasons why we do this stuff, and a lot of it, you know, again, in the Growing Healthy report, has significant impact on people's health and well-being. And even things like climate change, you know, unfettered development, we see what's happening with the rainforests around the world, have impacts on all of us down the road. I mean, I'm concerned about things like the mosquito population and as we don't pay attention to these things, so.
I would just add, I think, diversity of opinion is good. I think there should be a format for the public to share those diverse opinions. I think the challenge with the current situation is that a small group and maybe a couple counselors have started making it very personal. And I really think that's, to my perception, that's really more the issue, because I think it's important to have public discourse, right? Everybody's got different feelings about things. We should hear everyone's opinion. I think the challenge has been it's become very personal, and I think some of the dialogue has been derogatory towards staff, county staff. And as you can see with Gordy and your interactions with public health, and probably all of us in the work we do, we're very passionate about the work we do. We're not doing this for the big bucks, right? We're doing it because we really care about what we're doing. And so I think, as you can see with Gordy, I think it starts to take a toll on staff when they feel that it's becoming a personal thing and no longer about the true issues.
This is a real hard one for me. Kind of where the business that I'm in, the septic business, I don't agree with everything that's in the plan and the zoning.
Right.
But the way it's come about, the process, issues were brought up too late in the process. And, I think there's, in some of the zoning, there's some options that need to be looked at. And some of the counselors have maybe said, we need to come back at a later date and maybe look at it, because, some of the people, the opposition or whatever, they do have some valid points here and there to look at. My role has been on the septics to have accurate information out there. Our designer group hasn't really taken, we haven't asked to take an issue. I've taken the stand. I just want the facts out there about septics on it. But the way it's come up and the way it's turning is, I don't know, that's, it's just kind of turned ugly. To say that, I'll disagree with Gordy in some ways, he's presented one side and they've got a side. I think on some points it should probably be somewhere in the middle, or opportunity at a later date to come back and look at it. I know they're on a timeline, kind of dictated by the state, I guess, to look at it. So I don't know if what I said made any sense or not, but.
I think the personal thing is, give you an example of what stuff you work on. So like complete streets. Complete streets mean that you have streets designed that accommodate all kinds of transportation. It's also called multimodal transportation. So cars, bicycles, pedestrians, light rail or rapid transit, those are streets that accommodate all of them. And there's a whole body of literature. When you guys drafted the Growing Healthy report, there was a ton of research. There's a lot more research that's emerging every day that complete streets actually result in improved health of the community around it, because people get out and have more opportunities for physical activity. In the discussions around this, it's become portrayed as a war on automobiles with a car and a line drawn through it. So it has become kind of personal. What started out as something that, was a discussion about how we really want our communities to look like and what's related to health became kind of a more of a philosophic and personal debate, so to speak, and it has gotten pretty personal.
And yet it's based on evidence. You know, the recommendations in that report were totally based on evidence, and working with Brendan, you know, and all the research that was especially coming out of Portland State about transportation, that was one of the early chapters that we worked on. And I still remember one of the first things, you know, in looking at, you know, public transportation on a complete street, if you're within a quarter mile of your access to public transportation, communities that have that bus stop or light rail or whatever kind of public transportation, those people are healthier because, you know, every day going to the bus stop is part of their daily activity. So they don't need to worry about going to the gym. They get their gym going to and from work. And so the whole idea of having a public transit stop within a quarter mile is some of the things that we talked about on this council in terms of what the information that we were learning about the evidence in transportation and health coming out of that Urban Policy Institute over at Portland State and all the research. So,
and we know, even clinically, we know that if you see somebody in the clinic who's, let's say, overweight and you prescribe fresh fruits and vegetables, but they're a single parent who's got to schlep their kids on three different bus lines to get to a grocery store, there's good evidence that, you know, access, for example, access to healthy food retail is critical for your health. I mean, behaviors are constrained by the environment. There's great evidence around the influence of the built environment on health. And that's what the Growing Healthier Report is, and that's what we're trying to get into the comprehensive plan, because we know the health of our community is really dependent on it. That's a debate. I mean, it is a debate about that versus individual,
One way that I look at it is you could have all the disagreements in the world on what the zoning should be, whatever, but the community design elements and all that should be in place irregardless of what the zoning is. And that's where I think people are having a hard time separating the issue too. You know, in this day and age, we need something like the Community Healthier Report to be incorporated into the design.
And we can all agree on that. Yeah. So, right, so we'll get something out. Because, the Growing Healthier Report didn't address this other debate that's going on around zoning and... Cool. I hope that works for everybody. Okay.
Any other inputs or questions? If not, the meeting's adjourned.
Great.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Has always been a major problem with me with our legislature. When they make decisions, they thought it was a party line instead of...